are bad. It's a good thing you found us. We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network. Your path, act to stability.
What's up, guys? It's your boy, L. Douglas Hogan. I'm running solo today because my boy, your other boy, Ryan Buford, is out doing some things he had to get done around the home. And hey, family comes first in all situations. So you guys just remember that. Family comes first. Bear with me as I'm trying to work with my new audio equipment. That's right. You might hear some new gadgets, some new gizmos, some new sound effects, and that's okay. If I can bring you something cool, I'm going to try to bring you something cool.
Something like a robot voice.
Might be really cool to play with once in a while. I don't know. I got all kinds of sound effects and things like that going on. But, what is this? A sensor? Make me sound like a swearing at people or something like that. I'm not swearing. I swear to God, I'm not swearing at anybody. So that's kind of cool. Anyway, I don't want to be annoying anybody with all the crazy sound effects, but you will forgive me, I know. If you hear some new sound effects, record scratches, anything like that. Anyway, have you guys heard, speaking of sound effects, and it makes me think of technology, right? We got some crazy technology these days, and the things that they're finding over in Giza, at the Great Pyramid of Giza, not Gaza, I'm not talking about the Gaza Strip, level it out, I don't care. Giza, what's going on over there, it's really, really cool. Some of this stuff, in case you've not heard, if you haven't heard this, you're living under a rock. The things that they're finding over there right now at the Pyramid of Giza defy explanation. They defy any logic, and it's leaving all the archaeologists, all the scientists, anybody who studies in this field, leaving them completely baffled. They have no idea what they've discovered. They've taken something called synthetic radar. Synthetic aperture radar, rather. And on March 16th, a doctor by the name of Ramini Dimi placed this system, or used this system that was designed by two other fellows, I believe at least two other fellows, placed this system over the Pyramid of Giza. And they started doing this research. So the way that this system works, this synthetic aperture radar, is it shoots, like any other radar system does, down deep into the ground, and it bounces off of dense surfaces or chambers through hollow surfaces. Either way, it comes back up. It bounces back up, and it sends this reading, this infrared X-ray, if you will. I'm just trying to use words that I can speak as a layman to you, more layman, to try to explain how the system works. And what they found was that there are these deep cylindrical shaped shafts way down into the ground. Okay. These cylindrical shaped shafts are wrapped in coils, which is extremely weird, because what do we know about electricity? If you study anything at all about electricity, you'll know that we today in our modern technology use coils to run electricity. And so this is really interesting that they're finding this. But anyway, this Dr. Ramini Dimi, he wanted to send some drones down. But the distance of these cylinders was 648 meters deep. And there's several of them. I want to say there's four of them. If there's not four, there's six. But I believe there's four of these cylinders that go 648 meters deep. So just to put this into perspective, if any of you are out there are veterans, especially Marines, because we qualify at the 500-yard line in the prone position, you've seen how small a man-made target is at 500 meters. Now we're going to go out an additional 148 meters, 648 meters deep. These cylinders go. Now understand this, that the pyramids that we know now were excavated. They weren't always above ground that, you know, in the way that we see them today. So there's a great possibility that a lot of some of these cylinders, maybe most of these cylinders, were at one time not under the ground at all. That perhaps that these columns, if you will, were at one point maybe above ground. I just want you to think about that, because we excavate everything that we find Archaeology is digging things, old buildings, old pyramids. You're excavating them out of the ground very carefully in many cases, and takes them sometimes years to uncover some of the things that they're finding. But it's crazy to me that these things were so deep into the ground. Anyway, so this Dr. Amini Dimi, they're going to send drones down there, but this doctor's like, no. It's going to take too long to get drones down and back again. So he volunteered to go down. So he went down at his pace, and it took him 1 week on foot to reach the bottom. He took some snacks and some beverages with him. It took him 1 week to reach the bottom. And when he got to the bottom, he reported that he saw a deep blue pool with bodies still floating in this water, this deep blue water. And he says that the bodies were so well preserved that you could still see the color in their eyes. That's kind of creepy. And then to think, he said that he had a really deep urge, like an intense urge to step into the pool. He resisted it. But that thought in itself was kind of weird. And I don't know if it was just maybe he was just being inquisitive, but that urge is just something, I don't know. If I was in that situation, I don't know that I would feel an urge to wade into a deep blue body of water that hadn't seen the light of day in probably tens of thousands of years and had bodies in it still that were perfectly preserved. Probably not. But furthermore, we found out also through his discovery, you know, that these pillars also connect to more square structures that are even deeper into the ground. So those combined, the 648 meter deep cylinders connected to these two square or rectangular structures extend more than 2 kilometers below the surface of the earth. So that together is 1.2 miles from the base of the pyramid all the way down to the bottom of these rectangular structures that the cylinders with the coils are connected to, 1.2 miles deep. That's crazy. And then you got to consider the fact that the pyramid itself is 471 feet tall. Okay. And they are also finding out that a lot of this stuff below the surface is built out of a particular kind of quartz. And this particular kind of quartz isn't native to the area. Okay, this quartz, and you'll forgive me if I can't remember the name of it, but if I remember right from my studies on this, this quartz that when you apply a tremendous amount of pressure to it, generates energy. You're like, whoa. So think about this for a second. We got this structure made out of a particular kind of quartz that isn't native to the area, that when pressure is applied to it, generates energy. Now, it takes a tremendous amount of this quartz and a tremendous amount of this of pressure and weight to generate this energy, to put pressure on this quartz to generate power. Two questions. Three questions. How did the quartz get there? How did they know about it? And who taught them that putting pressure on this quartz creates energy? How would they know about energy? And how would they know that it would take all this weight, all this pressure pushed onto this quartz to generate energy? You see what I'm saying here? They would have had to have known about this before they began the construction of it. Elsewise, they wouldn't have brought it from another area to into this particular place, this particular location. And how would they have known to put all this stone in the shape of a pyramid that are all precise measurements and precise angles and all aligned perfectly with the particular constellation, the constellation of Orion? That's right. Specifically, the Giza pyramids in Egypt are aligned with the constellation of Orion. And not just these pyramids, but the Mexican pyramids in Teotihuacan. I got to look up the spelling of this. Teotihuacan. Teotihuacan. They're also aligned with the three stars of Orion's belt. So that's just... There's so many questions here. These pyramids in Giza and in Mexico are aligned with this constellation of Orion, particularly with the three stars that make up Orion's belt. And it's just, you can't tell me if that's coincidence. These nations are on separate continents. They don't even touch each other. Tens of thousands of years ago, how would they have known to build pyramids in this shape with the same exact measurements, the same exact angles, right? It just... It defies logic with me. And you can't tell me that God, in all of his awesomeness, in all of his creativity, designed a universe just for us to observe many of these galaxies we can't even see with our naked eye. I just don't buy the fact that he put life only on Earth. That, to me, is restricting his creativity and his power. Why do we believe that? Because Jesus was native to Earth, you know? Well, and the Christian argument is, well, that's not in the Bible. No, neither are automobiles, neither is smoking, right? There's a lot of things that aren't in the Bible. Airplanes, you see what I'm saying? There's a lot of things that aren't in the Bible. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. God put things in the Bible that we need to direct us to salvation, that we need to guide us in the ways of righteousness. In the Old Testament, in the law, in the Levitical code, God gave Moses specific instructions and Levi, who was the high priest, and his sons, okay? This Levitical code that was given to them and the outline for the tabernacle in the wilderness was all a type and shadow of salvation for the New Testament. They didn't know it then, but it was designed to show them that they cannot be righteous. They cannot of their own righteousness be saved. It was impossible to save themselves by the code. That's why when in the tabernacle in the wilderness, they had to do these annual sacrifices to wash away their sins. But in the New Testament, we know this says, for the blood of bulls and goats cannot wash away sins. So that's why they had to do this annually, right? As a sign that, hey, we can't live by this strict code that you've given us to be righteous. So therefore, we have to do this. And so basically, when you came into the tabernacle, okay, the first thing that was there was the altar of fire, all right, the altar of sacrifice. And that was like today a form of repentance, of dying to self. But it was foreshadowed back then as an altar of sacrifice. And then you'd go on from there to the brazen laver, which was a big bronze laver, a big container, if you will, full of water that the priest had to wash with. That is symbolic today of water baptism, that you have to wash before you could go into the holy place, which was the next step that the priest had to go into. And inside of the holy place, there was the candlesticks, the incense, the table of shewbread. And beyond that was a place where they kept the Ark of the Covenant. That was called the Holiest of Holies. And the high priest was the only person that could go in there. And when he went in, it was customary back then to tie a rope onto him in case he accidentally touched the Ark of the Covenant. And then they could pull his body out. So those were forms of types and shadows. And I'm telling you all of this because God put that stuff in the Old Testament to prepare us for the New Testament. All the Old Testament was, it wasn't about what's outside of Earth. It doesn't matter what's outside of Earth. What we need to know is what God gives us. And in the Old Testament, he gave us an outline for the New Testament. Jesus came and fulfilled. He didn't do away with the Old Testament. He fulfilled the Old Testament. He died. He became the sacrifice, right? He was buried, as the Bible compares that also with baptism. And then he rose again, which the Bible compares that to a newness of life or the receiving of the Holy Spirit in the new believer. These are all types and shadows. The whole Bible is about these things, death, burial, and resurrection. The Old Testament and the New Testament, death, burial, and resurrection. There's lots of things in the Bible, lots of stories, but it all encapsulates death, burial, and resurrection. It all encapsulates the greatness of God, his mercy. It encapsulates righteousness, encapsulates sin, that you cannot live without God's righteousness, that our own self-righteousness cannot save us. That's what's in the Bible. So when we talk about things outside of Earth, the Bible is pretty much quiet on it because it's not necessary to our salvation. But there are some ambiguous references. Now, you have to understand that when people living thousands of years ago talk about technology, they have to describe it in terms and words of their time. So they would compare it to things that they were familiar with. So if you were to head over to, say, the book of Ezekiel, chapter 1, verse 15, tell you what, I'm going to go back up to, let's just start with verse 13. And you can go back and read the entire chapter, but this is what I'm doing here on the show today. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. Now, as I read this to you guys, I want you to think about, we won't say UFO because our government has stopped using the term UFO because they believe that it's ambiguous with War of the Worlds and hysteria and mass panic. So they have decided to start calling them UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. Okay. I want you to use your mind and just imagine, okay, what Ezekiel is writing here, because he's writing with words that he understands from his time: lightning, fire, smoke. And he's going to start using the word wheel here in a minute. For wheel, I would think round. Think with terms that we understand today. Okay. And he goes on, as for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire and like the appearance of lamps. In other words, bright lights, right? It went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning, and the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of beryl, and that's B-E-R-Y-L, the color of beryl. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was, as it were, a wheel in the middle of a wheel. Where they went up upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. So I'm going to stop there. You guys go and read that section of scripture, because he's trying to explain something here. He's trying to say that he saw these wheels, when he says a wheel within a wheel. So he sees something round, maybe cylindrical, something spinning, and there's something, I'm thinking of a gyroscope, because he's talking about something that's spinning and something that was in the middle of it that wasn't spinning. It was like a wheel within a wheel. And so this one wheel was spinning, but the other one did not spin. And then there was another one that did spin. And so I'm seeing in this description, he wouldn't have known what a gyroscope was back then, but I'm seeing kind of a gyroscope kind of a thing. And so I think it's amazing that back then he saw something like this, Ezekiel did, and he documented it. Now you think, but Doug, you said that God doesn't talk about things from, okay. Yes. He's recording this scripture, but it's not by itself. He's not talking by itself as if, hey, I want to educate you guys on things that are extraterrestrial. There's a larger context here that Ezekiel's talking about, and this happens to be in the middle of it. And I drew your attention to that because it's peculiar to me. It's strange to me, and it sounds to me like he's not taking this thing out of context, but it's a part of the context. He's writing this bigger chapter, this bigger context, but inside of this is this gem, this thing that I want to talk about. It's like he saw technology back then, and it just doesn't stop with Ezekiel. John, the Revelator, when he was writing the book of Revelations, he saw things. He explained as grasshoppers with hair and the men's of faces. And when I hear that, I'm like, what do we have today that he would see and maybe confuse with a locust or a grasshopper? And I started to think maybe a helicopter, because he mentioned also that it had a stinger or a tail. And I started thinking about a helicopter. Well, it's got this spinning device with propeller blades on the back, right? That could be confused with a stinger. The rotator blades on top, the propellers on top, could be confused with hair. And he said the face of men. So he could maybe see windows, glass, with a couple people in there driving, flying this helicopter, and it would have the face of men. You see what I'm saying? So these are technologies that he would see way back then and communicate that to us in terms that he knew in his time. But I think this is all very peculiar, because I bring all this stuff up because, especially the Ezekiel thing, because I don't believe personally, and this is just me, I'm not speaking for Ryan, but I think that he's on board with me, that we're not alone in this universe. I think it would be haughty and arrogant of us to say as a human species that God only created us. First of all, you don't know that. Just because it's not mentioned in the Bible doesn't mean that's not true. I don't think you should say things like that because you don't know that God created something outside of this universe or outside of this galaxy, rather. If God created us and we're the apple of his eye, then why couldn't he do this again in another solar system? Andromeda is millions of light years away and it's headed towards us. But that galaxy in and of itself is larger than the Milky Way, the galaxy that we live in. And we have how many hundreds of thousands of stars, suns rotating around the center of this galaxy being pulled towards a massive black hole. This has been going on for a long time since the beginning of creation. And of those tens of thousands of stars, there's multiple planets orbiting around each one of those stars. There's a Goldilocks zone around every star. And in that Goldilocks zone is a possibility. When I say Goldilocks zone, there's a distance from the star where it's sustainable for life. If you get too close, it's too hot. You can't survive. Get too far away, it's too cold. You can't survive. But in the middle, there's a warmth. There's a good spot where life can thrive. Because God is so great and he's so creative and he's capable of doing those things, I think that it's possible that he did, in fact, create life elsewhere. It doesn't matter for our salvation, though. So I don't want people to get wrapped up and scared in that stuff because we need to focus on what God gave us in his word. But all that being said, it's interesting to me that that Giza, situated like it is, with 648-meter tall pillars below the ground, and even more structures below that extend some 1.2 miles below the surface of the earth, that maybe at one point was all above the earth. Maybe there's an entire city there that's buried under the earth. We don't know. Christians believe that the earth is a little over 6,000 years old, and that's fine. But there's other theories. It's just a theory, because when God created, there's a whole process there in the book of Genesis on the first day. First day, what's a day? Well, is it 24 hours? No, it can't be 24 hours because 24 hours is based on our solar system. It's based on the time it takes the earth to wrap around the sun, but the sun hadn't been created yet. So Moses, as he's writing the book of Genesis, as the Spirit of the Lord moved upon him to write this, he said, on the first day. And the Bible does say in another place that 1,000 years is a day is as 1,000 years to the Lord. But the Bible does say in 2 Peter, but beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years and 1,000 years as a day. That doesn't mean that 1,000 years of our time is one day to God. It's saying that God has no concept of time because exists outside of time. There is no time with God. Time is relative to us as a people. Time is relative to humanity because time is how we know it on our earth as we rotate around the sun. Get rid of our sun and say we're floating, existing in space. Time becomes irrelevant. You see what I'm saying? So it's just when Moses penned that on the first day, how long was a day? It could have been 1 million years. Day two could have been 2 million years. You know, it doesn't matter. The point being that there was a separation of time in a relative sense. There's a separation here of events as we know that time, but time is nothing with God. So I believe personally, and this is just me, this is just Doug Hogan speaking, that we've been here much longer. And the things that we're finding in the earth still to this day, dinosaur bones, you know, some Christians don't believe in dinosaurs. We uncover the bones all the time. And they were actually documented. You go back and read the book of Job, which chronologically is one of the oldest stories in the Bible. Job talked about these kinds of, talked about dragons, and he talked about things, behemoth. And I think it was a behemoth. He talked about that had a tail the size of a cedar tree. That's a pretty big tail. It sounds like a brontosaurus to me. But these things have been in the earth for a long, long time. And it's just really intriguing to me that this has been discovered and it's really big. And you know what? This just came to me and it's just a completely way off topic probably. It fits in line contextually, and I don't even know if it's true. So don't throw rocks at me or tomatoes or anything else if this pans out to not be true. But I heard through the grapevine, and I haven't found a lot of substance to back it up yet, that the James Webb telescope, and I'm going to tell you two things that James Webb telescope allegedly found. Cities on an exoplanet several thousand light years from Earth. So essentially that this James Webb telescope found, you know how we can see cities on Earth from space, allegedly. It's similar to that. They found this, and they believe that this they found a life on another planet. We don't know that for sure. That's kind of an exciting. Don't know. We'll never be able to travel there. It's just interesting. Also, I heard that the James Webb Telescope found two or three city-sized objects in the sky that were traveling at light speed or faster than light speed and made a sudden self-correction, and it's heading towards Earth. Don't know how long it's going to take them to get here. Could be 2 weeks, could be 2 years. I don't know. But the fact that this, and I look it up, do some digging. If you don't find anything, fine. Maybe I'm just, my sources are crazy because I do tend to look at some crazy things sometimes. But if it's something is flying at light speed and you could pick it up and it looks like a shooting star or something like that, and it's being watched by a telescope or by scientists, and then it self-corrects and suddenly makes an L-shaped turn, that's not natural. That's being controlled by intelligence. I think that's really, really intriguing. So let's move on. I tell you what, let's take a quick break here. Be right back. The Rising Republic, along with other shows on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, is brought to you by our great sponsors, sponsors like PackFresh USA. PackFresh USA believes it's essential for buyers to feel completely confident in the security of their food storage, which is why every purchase is backed by an unconditional guarantee. Their oxygen absorbers are designed to absorb 180 to 300% of their rated capacity, providing a safety buffer to ensure optimal freshness. PackFresh USA's convenient 10 packs minimize exposure, reduce waste, and eliminate the need for resealing. To support and educate customers, especially those new to long-term food storage, the company provides its signature 5-star service along with a comprehensive long-term food storage guide. Oxygen indicators are included in every package to verify freshness at a glance. Additionally, PackFresh USA is proud to be certified organic by the Idaho State Department of Agriculture. For personalized support, customers can contact 5-star service at PackFreshUSA.com. Again, that's the number 5-star service at PackFreshUSA.com. Welcome back to the Rising Republic. I just wanted to switch gears here for a second because there's something interesting going on in Texas that I thought you should know about, and it's mind-boggling to me that this has been going on under Greg Abbott's nose, and he's acting like he knew nothing about it. This Sharia city, or this it's not a city yet, the Sharia community, this Muslim community where Sharia law is in full effect, allegedly, in Texas. Listen to this.
Sharia law in Texas. Have you heard about this thing? It may be coming in an epic way. There is a new development called Epic City, right? Epic City, right around Plano. And this is a basically Sharia law central. Everybody there, the whole thing set up under Sharia law. It's pretty antithetical to the United States Constitution. The dominant media, even there in Texas, is kind of tiptoeing around it. Fortunately, guys like Greg Abbott and Ken Paxton are on the case.
These 400 acres near Josephine between Collin and Hunt counties could possibly become the new Epic City. Its website describing it as a community aimed at serving the needs of the Muslim community, including 1,000 homes, a K-12 faith-based school, a mosque, apartments, shops, and even a community college. The development organized by the East Plano Islamic Center, but Epic City is now at the center of controversy, saying, quote,
I just want to say real quick here, this is Greg Kelly over at Newsmax reporting on this, and everything that's going on here is antithetical to the United States Constitution. Here's the thing, the big thing right here. The U.S. Constitution is the law of the land. Period. End of discussion. There is no room for Sharia law or any other law besides the United States Constitution in our country. This is a no-go, and I'm personally willing to fight this. This will not never stop with a community. It's a community now, it's a town later, then a county, then a state. You see what I'm saying? These guys do not understand anything but violence. Sharia law is violence. You want to know how Sharia law treats the LGBTQ community? Go to Iran. Go visit Hezbollah. go tell them, take a buddy with you, and go tell them that you identify as queer, lesbian, bisexual, whatever kind of alphabet you are, and watch them throw your friend off of the tallest building in the neighborhood or behead them. They murder people who are gay. They scourge their wives because Allah tells Muslims in the Quran to beat and scourge their wives into submission. So you think you are oppressing the United States? Honey, you're not. You go fly your Palestine flags and go over there and in Gaza or anywhere else where these Palestinians are and tell them you're gay and that you support them and see how you get treated. All right, back to Newsmax.
Reports indicate that this large-scale real estate development may seek to incorporate elements of Sharia law into its operations. According to the Council on American Islamic Relations, Sharia law is a framework for personal conduct and moral guidance, but the regulation of the law varies depending on the person and country. Governor Abbott posting this message on X, to be clear, Sharia law is not allowed in Texas, nor are Sharia cities.
Now, let's be clear, you can be whatever religion you want in America, freedom of religion, absolutely. But you can't set up a community where you enforce Sharia law, because look at some of the harshest components of Sharia law. They got the death penalty for things like adultery. Now, I know that's not good, but, you know, adultery is not good, but you don't die for it in America. You can be put to death if you happen to be gay. Or if you move on from Islam to another religion, they can put you to death for that. So also, I think the general kind of overtone here is we want to maintain, you can be whatever religion you want, but this stuff right here conflicts with the United States Constitution. And I don't think we want to see what happened in the UK happen here. All right. Epic City is a big step in the direction of, well, the UK. They're losing their culture. They're losing everything over there.
The United Kingdom has been completely overrun with Muslims. And they're beating citizens in the streets. And it's just what they're dealing with can't happen here. There's another video here. On this same topic, let me see if I can locate it. Of course, it's been taken down because it must have offended some person and they commented or complained about it. And it's just, it's been removed. But I want to read something else to you in lieu of that because, I wish I could give credit to who wrote this because I've had this in my possession for a number of years and I don't know who wrote it. If you're hearing this and you wrote it, send me some word and I'll give you some kudos for it. But the question here is, can a Muslim, even a good Muslim, be a good American? So it says, this question was forwarded to a friend who worked in Saudi Arabia for 20 years. And he was asked that question, can a good Muslim be a good American? Here's his answer. Theologically, no. Because his allegiance is to Allah, the moon god of Arabia. Religiously, no. Because no other religion is accepted by his Allah except Islam. Scripturally, no, because his allegiance is to the five pillars of Islam and the Quran. Geographically, no, because his allegiance is to Mecca, to which he turns in prayer five times a day. Socially, no, because his allegiance to Islam forbids him to make friends with Christians or Jews. Politically, no, because he must submit to the mullahs, which are the spiritual leaders, who teach annihilation of Israel and the destruction of America, the great Satan. Domestically, no, because he is instructed to marry four women and beat and scourge his wife when she disobeys him. In case you're wondering, that's Quran 434. Intellectually, no, because he cannot accept the American Constitution since it's based on biblical principles and he believes the Bible to be corrupt. Philosophically, no, because Islam, Muhammad, and the Quran does not allow freedom of religion and expression. Democracy and Islam cannot coexist. Every Muslim government is either dictatorial or autocratic. Finally, spiritually, no, because when we declare one nation under God, the Christian's God is loving and kind, while Allah is never referred to as Heavenly Father, nor is he ever called love in the Quran's 99 excellent names. And he concludes by saying, therefore, After much study and deliberation, perhaps we should be very suspicious of all Muslims in this country. They obviously cannot be both good Muslims and good Americans. Call it what you wish, it's still the truth. You'd better believe it. The more who understand this, the better it will be for our country and our future. The religious war is bigger than we know or understand. Now, again, you know, I concur with this, but I did not write this. This is from somebody who lived in Saudi Arabia for 20 years. And these are good points. And we all know, anybody that's lived on this earth for a number of years understands that there's very strict guidelines. They're not even guidelines, very strict rules, laws that Muslims must follow. And a good Muslim would not be a good American. Sharia law is a very strict Muslim law. And there cannot be more than one law in the continental United States, because in the continental United States, the law of the land here is the Constitution. That is our law. That is what the Supreme Court recognizes. So for a community to have Sharia law, that's a no-go. This cannot happen. And I say with everything we have, we need to fight this. We need to resist this. Greg Abbott needs to make sure that this is dealt with appropriately, because it's insane to me that this place has been built right under his nose. And in many cases, building permits were not even filed. And I'm understanding there's 900 plus homes, residences in this community. And this worship center at the middle of it, at the center of it, none of it was built using building permits, which every other citizen has to apply for before they can build and construct. But somehow, they didn't have to. All that being said, I want to just kind of wrap things up here. I want to thank everybody for coming in and tuning into the Rising Republic. I want to send out a big thank you to our loyal listeners and anybody that has purchased any of my books on Kindle, paperback, or Audible. Remember, you're the Rising Republic. Feel free to email us at patriotrising1773@gmail.com. That's patriotrising1773@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm L. Douglas Hogan. Y'all come back now. You hear?